Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Justin Rutherford. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover to hide behind.
Detective Weaver said, "I'm sure you know why we're here." I was like, "What in the world is going on?"
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, was wooden!
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love comedy, movies, and Hollywood satire, you're going to want to listen to a brand new podcast called Get It to Dutch.
In Get It to Dutch, we play three aspiring screenwriters on a quest to get a script to big-time Hollywood producer Dutch Huxley.
Each week on the podcast, we perform a movie script right before your ears.
It's like going to a movie with your eyes closed.
And we have amazing guest stars, including Tim Robinson, Rob Hubel, Lily Sullivan, Jamie Moyer, and Weird Al Yankovic.
Listen to Get It to Dutch, a screenwriter's journey on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can watch the original episode we'll be discussing and every other episode of HBO's Curb Your Enthusiasm, including the new and final season, on Max. You can also watch the video version of the History of Curb Your Enthusiasm podcast on Max and YouTube as well. Links available in the episode description.
Episode 2 of season 2.
Yes.
Thor.
Yep.
Which, by the way, I have a nephew whose name is Thor, but it's pronounced Tor.
If I said that, you should definitely not believe me.
But I'm telling you the truth.
I know you're telling me the truth, but that is insanity.
And we started out.
By the way, I was just in the bathroom, and they had sugarcane toilet seat covers.
Sugar cane?
Yeah. And
you're supposed to lick the toilet?
No, I ate one. It was sweet and delicious.
So we start out and Larry is meeting Jeff at a hotel coffee shop.
Right.
And clearly it's a hotel. You could tell it's a hotel.
Right.
And Jeff tells Larry that.
Hold on one second here. Is it me or is Larry wearing some? Because I made a note. Collar is huge. I think it was me. In that scene, I'm looking at the shirt and the collar is so not even of its time.
I was just going to say, was that of its time?
No, it was, no collars were like that since maybe the 70s. And it's gigantic and pointy on the end.
Okay. You know, wardrobe is so important.
Right.
In all kinds of shows.
Well, by the way, our wardrobe person, I just complimented her the other day about what you were wearing.
Our wardrobe person now.
Yeah.
Yes. Leslie Schilling,
Leslie,
who is brilliant.
No, but by the way, she actually is. All your outfits, you stop in your tracks and you go, what the fuck?
You complimented her on that pearl outfit, I bet.
The one you just wore.
Yeah.
Because she clearly devised that outfit.
Yes,
and you'll
she
see
did.
It obviously this season when it comes out. And it was hilarious, but subtle.
But subtle, exactly.
No, but hilarious. And so subtle with your outfits?
There are times in fittings when, we'll put things together. And my fittings are very fun, by the way.
Yeah, I imagine.
And we'll put things together and we'll look at each other and we'll say, too much. And then we laugh because it's like, is it ever too much for Susie? And yes, it is sometimes too much for Susie.
Well, no, the joke becomes obvious.
Exactly.
You know.
So the subtlety is very
important. What did you wear early in this season that just killed me?
I know what it was.
What was it?
It was that chartreuse outfit.
Yeah, oh, yes. I mean, that was like, I couldn't even look at you without laughing. All right.
Okay, so you inform Larry that you have left Susie. Now, what's interesting is why would we divorce so early in the season? And the response is, I didn't know that my character was going to be here 12 seasons later.
Well, by the way, this is the first true Susie moment.
Well, when The Wire, in season one, when the fresh air kid, you know, robs our house.
Yeah, but by the way, anybody would
be upset by that. Correct.
Shit. This one, you've kicked him out. You are furious and you take it on Larry and he doesn't want to do this. That's why it's the favor, if you will. So it's pretty amazing.
It's starting to develop. But I was a day player. I had no contract. I didn't know from season to season if I was going to be in the show, how many episodes I was going to be in. Not until way, way later was I a regular.
Opinion.
What?
I think it was well thought out and well planned that we would have at this point when he wrote it, he knew it would be good for the episode and there was no thought.
Correct.
But you say day player, like it could have ended. No, it was working clearly. Larry David is not stupid, you know? And so there was no risk. It was like, let's try this. I think it's hilarious. And it was.
It was.
And then that flipped the dominoes, if you will, for the way you are all the way through to today.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, by the way, can I also say—
But I don't think that there was a plan in Larry's head that, you know, because every season we never knew we were going to do another season.
Never. But also, there wasn't the specific plan to where we've ended up today. But it was a spark in his eye that he saw, you know?
Yes.
And
yes.
But by the way, I was thinking yesterday when we filmed that scene by the staircase, and ultimately you tell him to leave the house, he still, after all these years, loses it. He can't control laughing.
He starts laughing.
Yeah, when you start saying that to him, he just falls apart.
I know. And how many times have I kicked him out of the house? Which is my favorite thing to do.
The first one, I think, was the house tour, if I'm not mistaken. That was the first time where you said, get out, that I remember.
We'll see. We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out. These are all we'll find outs. But the fact that you kill him on that all these years, because the first time you did it, he couldn't control himself.
Yeah.
Now he still laughs really hard.
Well, the fact that I make Larry laugh has given me a job all these years.
Yes, yes, yes.
So Jeff and Susie are getting a divorce. And Jeff is afraid that Susie is going to tell people about his sexual peccadilloes.
The deviance. Which sets a tone for the episode.
It does. And it's about sexual blackmail.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting subject because I've experienced this where people have told me sexual peccadilloes about exes. And I think it's so wrong.
Oh,
it is so wrong.
No, I've been the victim of that. In other words, being told. And you're like, no. Don't tell me. If a friend's cheating on his wife, do not tell me.
Yeah.
I really like and respect, and if I hate their wife, I say good for you. But most of the time—
You don't want the information.
No. And even then, you don't want the information. So it's like, I really dig and respect your wife. I don't want this information in my head when I talk to her next time, because it's just going to be pity.
Or I had somebody tell me once who many, many years ago, way before my husband, Jimmy, tell me I started dating this guy and an ex-girlfriend of his told me intimate things about his sexuality.
Well, that's just cruel.
It made me dislike her intensely.
Oh, by the way, how could you not?
Yeah.
So like, you know, you always say this phrase, too much information.
Yeah.
That's information that is unnecessary.
It's gratuitous.
It's wrong. Big bowl of wrong.
But Jeff is afraid that Susie is going to turn him in and sexual blackmail. And Larry says that's why he's never done anything remotely kinky.
And by the way, he's completely—
Been on the bottom is the kinkiest he's ever done.
But by the way, in that conversation, he is so curious as to what I might be doing.
Well, I think your character in many episodes acts out his fantasies for him.
Most certainly.
Yeah. And then you say to him, not even with your wife. And he says, I treat her like an acquaintance. She has nothing to say at all. I treat her like an acquaintance.
By the way, Richard Lewis, Larry David, they come up with this stuff where you go, where did that come from?
Yeah.
You know, how did you?
Well, you do too.
Yes, but I can't be amazed at my own skill at it.
Well, because you're thinking it.
Yeah, because I think
The truth of the matter is, all of us come up with stuff.
Things, yeah. Where did you pull that out? What crevice was that pulled out of?
I mean, we
and
were
by
doing...
by the way, what's her name is doing the show now?
Tracy Ullman.
Tracy Ullman's back.
Oh, my God. And I was just going to say that about Vince Vaughn.
Right.
Pull stuff out. Where does this come from?
Yeah.
Tracy. Oh, God, she's
yeah,
brilliant.
A couple of them. Being drunk and going to the city council meeting and saying what she... I don't want to tell you
because we'll
I want you...
There.
No, but I want them to watch it and be surprised by it. But she says two things in the episode we're working on, in two different scenes. Same scene. She says these two gems that I'm... Larry and I were talking about it laughing.
Yeah.
Because it was like, wow, where did that come from?
She's
so
quite
specific.
Brilliant.
Yeah, she's
quite brilliant.
And she's delightful.
And this is
as I'm apt to add this about people.
And it's not something you can teach.
No. That you cannot teach. That's why Larry and Richard, where they come up with these phrases. What were you, playing cards with Mengele? Wasn't that from last season when he was racist or something? Larry met the guy on the beach, the black.
Yeah.
But you know, these are, I treat her as an acquaintance.
Hilarious.
Hilarious. And he made it up in the moment. You know, that's what you're like, what? It's not in the script.
Our scripts,
by the way. Well, now they're much longer, but back in those days, they were like 7 pages long.
They were 7 pages long.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Now they're in the 20s.
So now Jeff asks Larry to do him a huge favor because Jeff is now living in the hotel and he wants Larry to go pick up his clothes and bring his clothes to the hotel. And Larry asks if Susie will be home and Jeff says yes, and Larry says, she'll eat me alive about Susie. And
I
always love when my character is talked about.
Right, that's got to be fun.
I always
enjoy
the way, that.
Look at him sending out a message of the way he's going to develop your character
right.
when he says, she'll eat me alive. He's establishing what you're about to do. And that's what I'm saying. The other appearances, you'd be angry at the fresh air fund, but
the other
so nice with my parents.
Normal, right.
You were very nice.
And it
know?
Is in this season, later on when we'll get to it in The Doll.
Well, the moment.
It's one of the reasons why The Doll is my favorite episode, because it's when you really establish the fear that Jeff and Larry live in.
Huge fear.
Yeah.
Huge fear.
We can't
even speak in front of you sometimes.
That's right.
And we even just filmed one.
And I enjoy that.
We filmed one yesterday.
Yes, we did.
We got painted into a corner and we didn't know what to do. And we looked at each other and we had to come up with some stupid bullshit.
And it's always, and I see right through you too.
Yeah. By the way, you said that right away. And you've said that many times before.
We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Stacy thought she had the perfect husband. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover for Justin Rutherford to hide behind.
They led me into the house, and I mean, it was like a movie.
He was sitting at our kitchen table. The cops were guarding him.
Stacy learned how far her husband would go to save himself.
I slept with a loaded gun next to my bed.
He did not just say, I wish he was dead. He actually gave details and explained different scenarios on how to kill him.
He, to me, is scarier than Jeffrey Dahmer.
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Mark.
I'm Greg.
I'm Brendan.
And this is a trailer for a new podcast called Get It to Dutch, A Screenwriter's Journey.
It's about screenwriting.
And a journey. The three of us play aspiring screenwriters on a quest to get a hit Hollywood script to famous producer Dutch Huxley.
Well, I would say one of us is aspiring and the other two are sort of struggling.
Which one of us is aspiring?
No, they're going to have to listen to the podcast.
But I don't know, and I made the podcast.
Well, I made the podcast, and I think you guys were along for the ride.
So each week, we bring in a script, we read it, and then we give each other notes.
And you'll also hear about our adventures navigating the Hollywood system.
The show features amazing guests like Tim Robinson, Lily Sullivan, Weird Al Yankovic, and Rob Hubel.
And like any great blockbuster, it's filled with heartbreak, adventure, suspense, and just a little tasteful nudity.
And some distasteful nudity.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that, guys.
Listen to Get It to Dutch, A Screenwriter's Journey on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar runs the business. I understand now. It's a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Gene. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we're back. So Larry says he will do the favor.
Yeah.
And Larry's now home, and Cheryl is, you know, they're sitting around at breakfast or something eating, and Cheryl is reading an article about AAA.
And
the political agenda of AAA about their environmental and the
pollution.
By the
way, that was definitely
based on Larry's wife, who was who was a very...
No, but not even based. I actually asked. That's fact. That was
fact.
At that time. I don't know what they are now, but at that time, that was factual information.
And Lori was a huge environmentalist.
Yeah, but
she made a whole movie about
it. Larry heard that exact information
from Lori saying that AAA, you know, destroys the environment, and they just want to get more members and more people driving and pollution and et cetera, et cetera. And Cheryl, you know, goes off on a tirade about this.
But by the way, he took it as if she's going blah, 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 blah. He didn't even pay attention.
Because he's a married man.
He knew it was AAA and something's wrong with AAA.
Right.
He's not going to hang on every note of that information.
And then Cheryl, and he's not really responding. And then Cheryl says to him,
why are you so quiet?
Oh, quiet. Here we are.
Are you thinking about sex?
What the hell are you talking about now?
Whenever you're quiet, you're usually thinking about sex.
I'm not thinking about sex. And that's
you're not?
Kind of.
Not thinking about a little afternoon sex or something? I'm just curious. It's kind of kinky.
You think I'm kinky?
Do you think you're kinky?
Well, you just said it's kind of kinky. You think I'm kinky? I'm not kinky.
I'm just saying, for you to want to have sex in the afternoon is kind of crazy.
First of all, I didn't say I wanted to have sex in the afternoon, did I? That's what you said. Why do you say that?
There's a lot going on in there that you don't ever...
Like sick things going on? Is that what you think?
I didn't say sick.
You think there's sick, twisted things going on?
Are there sick, twisted things going on?
No. Not at all.
Why are you so quiet? What are you thinking about? Are you thinking about sex? No, I'm not thinking about sex.
Right, he jumps right to that.
And then, because he's afraid of the sexual blackmail. We've already established that. And then she says, are you thinking about afternoon sex?
Which she clearly wants in this scene.
Yes.
And he doesn't do it because he was just,
to him, whenever you're quiet, you're thinking about sex. And then she says, the afternoon sex, kind of kinky. And she's saying that in a foreplay kind of playful way. And right away he gets defensive. I'm not kinky. And he gets like fearful and defensive with his own wife because he treats her like an acquaintance.
Right.
And Larry says to her, you think there are sick, twisted things going on? And he's thinking about you, obviously. That whole scene is so funny. Yeah. And then he goes to call Jason to talk about the show. And this is where they establish this whole thing. And Jason asks Larry to come to his office.
Right. Which, and by what the happens? Way, well,
which yeah. is in the Valley, which yeah. we know Larry lives on the West Side.
Yeah.
And it's far and it's a schlep.
Studio City.
Yeah.
Which is this when his tire goes out? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And Larry's like, he's never in Larry's office. He never has a meeting. He's never, never. I'm always traveling. And he's nonplussed that he has to schlep to Jason's office.
Mm-hmm.
But he does. Because he's accommodating. And as he's driving to go meet Jason in his office, he drives past Wanda doing a power walk in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And he yells out at her, quite innocently, I must say.
Oh, very much. He was being brave.
Hey, I know that tush anywhere.
Yeah.
And I...
He's not being lecherous at all.
I don't think he's being lecherous one iota.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something I would say to somebody.
Right.
A friend. And she just keeps walking and just whatever. And then he's driving along and there are kids in the back of a station wagon. What kind of car was that? It was an old, one of those wood paneled station wagons.
It was like a woody station wagon.
Wagoneer or something.
Yeah, Wagoneer.
I remember so well sitting in the back of the station wagon making faces out the back window. I mean, of my childhood. I remember that.
By the way, it brings up nausea to me.
Why?
I was in a car accident sitting in the back.
Can I just say to our audience, because some of you might be young, not only did we not have car seats for kids, we didn't have seat belts.
No, which were great because when your mom wanted to hit you in the back seat,
you would just go into the well.
You would move all over.
Exactly.
You had freedom.
But we would be just flailing around back there. There was no seat belts.
Yeah.
Just flailing around.
So I got into an accident and I remember I'd come from an ice cream place. We had crossed this intersection. We were hit. The back opened up. And my cousin and I flew out of the back seat about maybe, I'll say 50 yards, and landed on Pebble. And so I had a lot of,
How old were you?
10.
Uh-huh.
And I got cut up pretty good, but I was fine. I remember laying on the ground going, Mommy,
Mom,
I know. but what I want to say is I even remember flying in the air and seeing him flying in the air next to me.
Was he okay?
He was fine, too.
You were both okay.
It all stays with me, every detail.
Maybe that was the beginning, Jeff.
Of what?
Whatever.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Some kind of neuroses or some kind of...
Oh, that's what you're talking about. And by the way, is that a neuroses?
Or
when you think about a car accident?
No,
I think that's
some
normal.
Kind of fear, some kind of mommy issue, some kind of... I don't know.
Oh,
I'm just throwing it out.
All right. All that didn't come to fruition until I was in my 20s. And by the way, when I look back at
It was repressed.
No, there was nothing really repressed at that age. But starting in high school, it became a lot of noise in my head. And then later on,
it was
addressed.
It was the pebbles.
You're hooking on this accident that caused brain injury.
Yeah, we'll
and
see.
I was different.
We'll see.
Wait, what do you mean? It's not a future episode. What do you keep saying? We'll see. Leave me alone.
All right. So the three boys are in the back of the station wagon making faces at Larry. And Larry starts to play along with them.
Right.
You know, making faces,
by
being
the way,
silly.
He's really being sweet and funny.
And he's enjoying it.
He's enjoying it.
And then he starts, I forgot who started with the shooting.
It was Larry.
Larry starts with the shooting, fake shooting.
No,
with
the kids did.
The kids, okay. Kids start with the fake shooting. Larry starts with the fake shooting. And all of a sudden you see the kids' face change. They seem upset. And they turn around.
I always read it as they were getting their father to be worked up to do something.
Yes, I think so too.
I don't think they were freaked out because he'd been playing with them. But I think they're like, you know, we're going to get this guy.
Yeah, yeah. Bratty little kids. And this is something that I noticed that I had forgotten about. The car stops. And then we hear that spaghetti Western music.
And we see the feet. That's where it starts.
And we see the cowboy boots. And I didn't know that spaghetti Western music was used because that then became my theme.
Right, without a doubt.
So I was a little upset.
And by the way, when he
was
walking towards the car, he was a big guy and obviously well built when we filmed it and obviously a nice man. But that being said, when he first got out and he's walking towards Larry, I'm like, is Larry peeing in his pants? This guy's gigantic.
Well, Larry rolls up the window.
Yeah.
He rolls up the window like the coward that he is. And, you know, the cowardliness is such a comedic, all the way back to Bob Hope and Jack Benny and Woody Allen, they all played that cowardly role, which is right. comedic gold.
Always, yeah, it is really funny. Yeah.
And this guy, long blonde
because
hair.
Because I'm big and powerful and just a strong, strong, imposing man doesn't work for me.
Big and powerful.
Big and powerful.
Okay, yeah. Imposing. And this guy, long blonde hair, you know, clearly yeah. buff.
But he does look like a professional wrestler.
He does.
I think that's why we hired him. We looked at a lot of people who, you know, Larry wanted to establish the second we see him, like, oh, is this guy a professional wrestler? Because the other guys were big, whatever, but they didn't have that groove like this guy.
The long hair.
Well, the whole thing.
The Viking look.
Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah. Yeah.
And he calls Larry a bald turd, and he tells him he's going to shove
his
finger up your
sphincter.
Yeah, exactly.
He's talking to him like, you know, there's a guy named Gordon Solie when I was a kid in Florida. You know, I'm Gordon Solie. And he'd have a wrestler on each side of him arguing with each other, and that was like taken straight from that. It might have even been dialogue that he'd done before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think, you know, not in real life, but I'm saying in terms of...
This guy wasn't really a wrestler, was he? The actor?
I think he was just a gentle lovemaker.
Okay. One does not preclude the other. So Larry's traumatized because this big man is threatening him and he's going to stick his finger up his sphincter. And we move on?
Hold on. No, we don't move on. He disappears behind the car, the wrestler. And remember, Larry's like looking, what did he possibly do?
Disappearing behind my car. That's right.
And we're about to find out.
Right. He disappears behind Larry's car, and we don't know what he did. But soon Larry hears a little rattling sound, and he's got a flat tire. Obviously, this guy let the air out, slashed his tire, something. And Larry then decides to call AAA.
Mm-hmm.
Because what do you do when you have a flat tire?
Yes.
But AAA has been canceled. And apparently his wife canceled it, who she had no authorization to cancel. And he tries to re-up it, but he can't. So he decides he's going to change his own tire. He opens his trunk, clueless, which he, in real life, I believe would be.
Yes. Well, by the way,
he's
that's
clueless
not a stretch.
About most things. Yes.
Anything mechanical is not a stretch to think he couldn't do
and
it.
And there's a whole scene, you know, different people walk by, one of which was Dort, who was our prop master at the time.
But by the way, one of the recurring themes is someone would give him a little piece of
information,
but not expound
on it. Not
tell him how to do it.
You got to loosen the lug nuts, move
which
on.
Which is the lug nuts? What's going on?
You're
going
to bust your bumper, move
right.
on. I never took a shop class. And then he starts to offer people money to trade $35.
And he goes up. It's $30 and then $35.
And then just $10 for a verbal response.
Yeah,
and it's just on and on. And it's a hilarious scene and just establishing the Larry-ness of his life and how he's, you know, his wife is sabotaging him. Then he shows up at Jason's office and he's filthy from trying
he's
to change
grease
the
on his
grease
face,
on his face
dirt,
from trying to change the, you know, change the dryer, the tire. And Jason knows who this guy is because he tells him about the license plate, said Thor. And Jason said, oh, that's Thor Olsen. He's a professional wrestler, he tells Larry. Oh, and also then another important thing that's established, he sees the ticket on Jason's desk, the ticket from the camera.
Oh, yeah. He hands Larry that. What is that? I hate taking pictures. This is the domino effect of Larry's writing.
Correct.
Where it goes over and, you know.
And it's the light camera. There's a camera on the light.
Yeah. By the way, I had that before.
Yeah, of course. We all have.
I guess I went through a red light. I did. Otherwise, I wouldn't take my picture. I went through a red light and had my picture sent to me.
Yeah.
And by the way, nobody looks really good in those pictures.
Well, Jason even
they
says,
even
Jesus, I'm fat when he looks at the picture. This is a fantastic scene with Jason. Larry's all famished from the tire and everything. And they're going to make the meeting tomorrow.
Right.
And then they go back and forth about whose office they're going to have the meeting in. And this is a Jason brilliant scene, I think, don't you?
The way he plays it is so...
Yeah, we made a plan and the plan didn't work. And so you'll come back and we'll do it. First, we're going to do the plan. And it's back and forth and back and forth and back. And it's just, it's a brilliant little piece of improv, this scene.
We made a plan.
We set a plan.
We said, we'll meet at my office.
Right.
And we'll have a meeting.
Yes.
That's the plan. That hasn't been accomplished. Let's accomplish that. That's all.
But we attempted to have the meeting, but it was aborted.
We attempted and we failed. Let's have that meeting. Let's have that meeting.
We're having that meeting right now.
This is not a meeting about the show. This is a meeting about having a meeting.
I know, but the intention is the same. Don't you understand? I drove here with the same intention.
The driving is not the meeting,
Larry.
The driving is what we're talking about.
You keep
coming back to this insane thing. We're driving.
Yes.
Driving is not the issue. Did we make
it? I think driving is the issue.
We had a singular plan. We were going to have a meeting about the show.
Okay, so we're having a meeting.
You can drive around the world. We still haven't had a meeting.
So this scene, here's my last episode. I gave my fun fact thing, and that's this scene. This scene we started filming after lunch, 2:30, 3 o'clock. In the morning, we had shot the scene because it was right outside of Jason's office where we did the tire thing, which is where he was. So we'd done that earlier, and they're in the office, and Larry couldn't control his laughing.
Including this scene.
Jason pointing out why he's dirty. Jason saying everything he said to him, Larry was tickled. The scene started out, it's supposed to be day, but we went into the night. It's the hardest I've ever seen Larry laugh for an extended period. He cost us maybe 2 hours of his laughing because he couldn't recover.
Yeah.
It wasn't like laugh and go back, which is normal for him, but not like this because he knew.
I've seen him not recover for many, many takes.
Oh, yes, but I'm telling you, Susie, this was beyond anything I'd ever experienced with him. Yeah, so we had to light the outside to look like day, yet it's pitch black out. Like, it took that long, but Larry loves, this is a thing with you. Larry loves when other characters see the insaneness of what Larry's doing and point it out to him. You know, so you won't see this on camera, but off camera, Larry giggles and he just loves that. This was insanity.
Okay.
This was actually people getting mad at him.
Uh-huh.
Because it was like, what the fuck? What the fuck? And I would say—
Get professional.
I would say to Larry, look at his forehead. Don't look at his face, you know. Not that that's not part of a face. All right. I hope that was a fun fact for everyone. There might be future fun facts. I'm not going to guarantee it. The only thing I guarantee is that— I don't remember the guarantee I made last year. Money back guarantee. But I'm what? Oh, the podcast.
I don't remember. But this scene in particular struck me as just, this is why we improvise this show.
Yes. A thing of beauty.
Yeah, it was a thing of beauty.
I love that scene so much.
Improv people out there, watch that scene.
Right.
And learn. I don't know what you could learn because you don't have Jason and Larry's brains, but whatever.
We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Stacy thought she had the perfect husband. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover for Justin Rutherford to hide behind.
They led me into the house, and I mean, it was like a movie.
He was sitting at our kitchen table. The cops were guarding him.
Stacy learned how far her husband would go to save himself.
I slept with a loaded gun next to my bed.
He did not just say, I wish he was dead. He actually gave details and explained different scenarios on how to kill him.
He, to me, is scarier than Jeffrey Dahmer.
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar runs the business. I understand now. He's a wise man, Marie is a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Gene. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Mark.
I'm Greg.
I'm Brendan.
And this is a trailer for a new podcast called Get It to Dutch, A Screenwriter's Journey.
It's about screenwriting.
And a journey. The three of us play aspiring screenwriters on a quest to get a hit Hollywood script to famous producer Dutch Huxley.
Well, I would say one of us is aspiring and the other two are sort of struggling.
Which one of us is aspiring?
No, they're going to have to listen to the podcast.
But I don't know, and I made the podcast.
Well, I made the podcast, and I think you guys were along for the ride.
Each week, we bring in a script, we read it, and then we give each other notes.
And you'll also hear about our adventures navigating the Hollywood system.
The show features amazing guests like Tim Robinson, Lily Sullivan, Weird Al Yankovic, and Rob Hubel.
Like any great blockbuster, it's filled with heartbreak, adventure, suspense, and just a little tasteful nudity.
And some distasteful nudity.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that, guys.
Listen to Get It to Dutch, A Screenwriter's Journey on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we're back.
Tim Kazurinsky, an old friend of mine, Second City, Saturday Night Live, he was doing...
And has been on Curb.
Has been on Curb, yes, as, what's his name?
Hugh. Yeah.
He spoke at Second City when I was a young improviser there. And all these improvisers were in a room, hanging on his every word. This guy was on Saturday Night Live. He had a huge part in Neighbors. Anyhow, loved it. Someone brings up, they ask him about Eddie Murphy. And he says, let me tell you all something. There are no other better improvisers, better actors, and all of you will never come close. He said this, and I only wanted this yell for, I swear, this overcame me, but I didn't do it. Considering I have ADHD, it was amazing I didn't do it. But I wanted to yell, oh, I do, I will. You know, and by the way, having done a movie with Eddie Murphy, yes, I was in awe of his talent, where it made me think, like, how the fuck does he do that? But I held my own with him. And, you know, the way he said that, none of you will come close.
Before I started doing stand-up, and I was lost, I was just, had no idea what I was supposed to do. I thought I was wanted to be an actress, and I would take acting class, and I was totally bored and no idea. Somebody encouraged me to take an improv class.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I took an improv class and it was like revelatory to me. I was really good at it.
Right.
I had no idea I was good at it. You know, you do the freeze tag and I jump in. It was like, this is a whole part of myself I had no idea about.
Okay. You're saying this. Larry David told me yesterday that he didn't realize he was funny at all.
That's right. I was
until
there.
Until he got into college.
Got into college.
Right?
Yes.
Wow. I mean, and for me, I knew I was funny starting in nursery school.
Mm-hmm.
And by 11th grade, it was what I was going to do. And you couldn't stop me. So every year, it was a matter of pride that I was the funniest kid in school.
Yeah, he was not that.
No, not many of our peers are that. I was lucky to know that I was on a journey that was meant to be. It would have been sad, by the way, if I was one of those unfunny people and had that
feeling. And had that thing.
And by the way, you know where I decided this is, you know, maybe kind of lame, but kind of cool. I knew that I was going to move forward and do this. And I was meant to do this because after I saw the Blues Brothers, which moved me incredibly, and I felt such a kinship, and I recognized a lot of Chicago, and of course, Belushi and Aykroyd, and I mean, John Candy, you know, who wants an orange whip? Anyone orange whip? Which I've repeated that line a million times. Anyhow, when I got in the car And two guys that I'm still friends with, the Ostrow brothers, they said, well, what did you think of it? And I, without hesitating, I said, I'm on a mission from God. They go, they laughed. And I go, no, I'm being serious, which is a big line from the movie. We're on a mission from God. And it becomes an epiphany for Jake or Elwood. Elwood was Aykroyd. And so in the car, I kept saying, I'm on a mission from God. And they said, what is it? Actually, I said this, which I'm embarrassed about. I'm going to be a famous comedian. And by the way, they didn't laugh when I said that.
So you had never done stand-up at this point?
No. And very young, my friend Robin Siegel's mother, 17, 18, 19, would encourage me to go up and do stand-up. And that was really daunting, the idea of doing that. But I remember her as the only person in my life that encouraged me. Not that I was discouraged by anyone else. People laughed at me. But she was the only one going, hey,
that's what you should do.
Yeah. And I listened to her finally.
I hope you thanked her.
Thank you.
So now we're going to get back to the episode.
Now you're saying that implying that I have knocked the whole show off track.
I have not looked at me. I have not implied that one iota, Jeff.
You looked at me, I thought.
No.
By the way, everybody who's listening, she's lying.
Didn't I say to you yesterday that I like when we go off on our tangents?
Yeah, but it didn't seem like, you did, but right now it seemed like I'm going to get them back on track. But guess what?
Misreading.
I'm back on track now.
Larry goes home and he yells at Cheryl about canceling AAA. And then he says he's got to go change because he's a mess looking from changing the tire and go to Jeff's house to get his clothes. Then Cheryl says to him, why did you tell Wanda she has a big ass? And I don't think he did tell Wanda she had a big ass.
But by the way, that's what it felt like to her, what she thought he was doing, which is what we live with now. You know, they know you said it. I'm not talking about women. I'm talking about anybody who feels that they have been abused in that way. So everyone assumes that. And no, he meant it as a gentle joke.
Well, he says it was a friendly remark. I was being chummy.
Yeah.
He says I like big asses, he says.
Yeah.
And then they start having a fight about ass size. And then Cheryl accuses him of having an ass fetish.
Yes.
And then he gets back to, I'm not a deviant. I'm not kinky. And, you know, all of that stuff. And which goes back to the original scene with you in the beginning about the sexual blackmail.
Right.
He's very fearful of the sexual blackmail. And then Wanda comes over and she, you know, starts going after him. That's how you say hello.
By the way, she walked in the door and she announced herself. This is who I am on the show. I will not change one iota from this moment until many seasons later.
Yeah.
This is what I bring and I'm going to do it.
Wanda?
Oh, you know who I am. Okay. Thought I had to turn around and show you my big ass.
You completely misinterpreted
what?
That. I didn't... I didn't say you had a big
ass. You yelled out, hey, big ass,
no,
Wanda.
I didn't say big ass. Oh. Just saying hello. I was just trying.
Is that how you say hello?
Well.
Is that a hey, big ass? Or hey, assy? Hey, I know your ass. What is that? That's not how you say hello, is it?
Perhaps not.
So something about my ass has made you download it and you stored it in your memory.
No, that's not so.
What is wrong with this man? We were just having this discussion.
Did you tell him how wrong it is to say something like that?
I told him.
You know, a woman's ass is very personal.
I didn't know he was so obsessed with asses.
This man, you know what? You have an ass man. Larry, you are an ass man.
I am not an ass man.
You are an ass man.
What the fetish?
I don't have any ass fetish, okay? Let me get that straight. Obsessed with asses? I'm not obsessed with asses.
Okay, assy. And what is that shit all over you? What you been doing? Scrounging around looking for asses? All under bleachers and say, oh, where's the ass?
Exactly. You're establishing that relationship there.
But from the very beginning, boom.
Right.
Like what Cheryl's is not the same. Yours wasn't the same. Wanda, when she comes in, boom.
Okay. So then Larry goes to our house and I answer the door.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me say something about my outfit here. It's not fully Susie Green yet.
Right.
But it started to develop that look that I had wanted. And I remember saying to Wendy, who was our wardrobe person at the time, what I wanted this woman to look like. I had this idea and she didn't fully get it. I wanted her to look like those Russian women in Brighton Beach in Brooklyn who dress in these kinds of very outrageous out there ways. And I remember Wendy saying to me, where would I get those clothes? And I said, the back room of Lohmann's, which no longer exists. And I had to take her on a little field trip to Lohmann's. She'd never heard of Lohmann's. So she didn't, well, whatever. A lot of people haven't at this point, but you're my age and you grew up in New York, you know all about Wellmans.
This is also the first episode, and later on this season, it is glued and it is established, but this is the first episode that Larry and I are scared of you.
Right.
And you hammer Larry about me and at Larry in the classic Susie way. We know it's now classic, but we have not seen it. Season one, you were very nice. I mean, and you were
except for that one scene.
Yeah, with the fresh air fun kid who robbed us.
That
was deserved. That was deserved.
Right.
Who wouldn't be excited in a situation like that?
Right.
You know?
So this is where you start to see what a crazy woman she is.
Right.
And Anna asked if that whole tirade that I did was improvised. Yes, everything is improvised.
Yeah, everything is improvised on the show.
There's a couple of things that will come up that will tell you when they happen in later seasons that were scripted for a reason.
No, but by the way, in terms of scripted, they're not scripted at all, but there might be a line that he writes down. And by the way, I get maybe a half dozen lines a season, so I'll be damned if I'm not going to deliver it perfect. And it's usually a line, not even, you know, a paragraph.
What do you mean? A line
in other words,
scripted that has to be
in the outline,
said.
There's a line Jeff says, which rarely appears. So when he writes that, I feel a sense of duty
to say that line.
To say that line perfectly.
I'll get lines like that where it'll be like, Susie tells Larry to go fuck himself. Those are the lines that I get, which I usually do anyway. I answer the door. Susie answers the door. Oh, Jeff's messenger boy is here. You
from
know,
the top, right
from
there,
the top,
that line.
From the top.
We know what's going on.
And, you know, on and on about your little bimbo actresses, you're getting blowjobs. And I was like, no, no. And then I hand Larry your porn stash. And on the porn stash.
Which comes up later.
In another episode.
Yeah.
Not even the season.
Right.
And that we focus on Big Ass Mama was in your Well, actually, there was the porn stash in the Porno Gill episode
of season
one.
Was that the one where I had a heart attack and I told him to get it out?
Yes.
Is that it? We already passed that?
Yeah, we did that
in
season one.
And then he says,
one.
I know that guy when my parents walk in?
Yes, that was the Odenkirk character.
I don't remember discussing that particular scene.
Yeah, we did.
And by the way, there's some great things from Louis in this episode. Louis Nye.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we get to that. The rotten. I love the rotten. You know, you're into that big ass stuff. No, I recognize that woman. And then I go into this whole how you defile me and you violate me. You know what Jeff does? I do the sexual blackmail. Exactly
and
what you're
Larry's
afraid of.
And what's Larry's reaction? No. I don't want to hear. Please, I beg of you.
And while we're in the middle of this, who walks in? Your parents.
But it's not while we're in the middle. We go down. You go downstairs, with Larry. You open the door and there are your in-laws whose child you just kicked out of your
house. Kicked out and they're
worried.
But, yet,
but by the way, you're so kind to them.
Well, I have a relationship with them.
No, but I'm saying
the juxtaposition.
Which is interesting.
And Louis Nye, who plays your dad. I don't know that we ever had names for them, did we? For your parents?
I don't remember.
Mom and Dad, we just call them. You've done something rotten.
But that's his opening line. And the way he says rotten. By the way, I'm watching it now and I'm laughing hard at the way he says rotten. Yeah, I mean.
He was great. I that was great casting for him as your father.
Oh my God.
And Mina.
I told that story already, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We loved him. And then Mina wants to go with Larry to the hotel to see her little baby boy she's so worried about. And Louis stays with me.
Why did you have to put those clothes, Jeff, just throw them in the bag? Why did you have to throw them in the trunk on top of a dirty old tire? Why?
There's obviously something wrong with
that. That's the question.
Yeah,
that
what
is
wrong with
that?
Well,
why would
question.
Anybody do that? Person wouldn't do that.
And I don't have a closet in my house. I'm just used to throwing things around like that.
And throwing them on the floor.
I throw them on the floor. That's how all my clothes are at home, all on the floor. I don't even have a bed. I sleep on a big pile of clothes.
Well, it's just disgusting.
I'm a disgusting man.
Well, I can see that.
Why? She's in the car. She's hilarious with him in the car.
And he's doing his best to ignore.
Why did you throw clothes on the floor?
His mother-in-law, and he still is dealing with it in a way of like, kill me.
Exactly. And she is the mother-in-law.
And
you know what I mean?
Mina Kolb.
Terrific.
Magic.
You know, and he says to her, but she's like, why? He says, I'm a disgusting man. He says...
Yeah, he starts playing with her questions.
And then I forget why she wanted to look for a pen. Do you remember why she wanted to look for a pen?
No, there was something. She saw a sign.
That's right. She wants her to write something down, so she wants to look for a pen. So she turns around to go into the back seat.
No, but Larry tells her there's a pen in the back seat.
The pen in the back seat. And her ass is in the air while she's rummaging around right. in the back seat
for a
pen.
And Larry makes a face, having no idea where this is
going
to
be. Where this is going.
Yeah.
And then they get to the hotel, and Larry, he carries the clothes in, and mind it, your mother's just rambling. And then he sees Thor
right.
in the hotel. And Jason had established, we hadn't said this, that there was a wrestling match in town.
But yes. Also we're skipping that in the parking lot when he parked.
He saw the car, the station wagon with Thor. And again, Jason had established that there's a big wrestling convention or meet or whatever they call it.
At the Staples Center. No, it was a match.
A match, okay. And minus cow, beautiful hotel, blah, blah. She goes up to the room. Then you come down.
No, I don't go up in the room. I send her up with the guy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You meet them, and then you send her up to the hotel
right,
with your
clothes.
Right,
and then come down. Yeah,
and then Larry spots Thor, and he says to you, remember you said you owed me one? I'm going to take you up on it.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a bizarre request. He wants you to let the air out of the tires.
Right.
And do it now, he says.
I don't know how to do it.
Accommodating.
But yeah, because a word's a word.
That's right.
You know.
And you know, this is your relationship with him.
Yes.
You're best friends, your manager, client.
Mostly it's me getting him in trouble, but quite often he gets me in trouble.
Correct. Yeah. But it's you two in cahoots always.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Stacy thought she had the perfect husband. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover for Justin Rutherford to hide behind.
They led me into the house, and I mean, it was like a movie.
He was sitting at our kitchen table. The cops were guarding him.
Stacy learned how far her husband would go to save himself.
I slept with a loaded gun next to my bed.
He did not just say, I wish he was dead. He actually gave details and explained different scenarios on how to kill him.
He, to me, is scarier than Jeffrey Dahmer.
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar on the business. I understand now. He's a wise man, marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Gene. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Mark.
I'm Greg.
I'm Brendan.
And this is a trailer for a new podcast called Get It to Dutch, A Screenwriter's Journey.
It's about screenwriting.
And a journey.
The three of us play aspiring screenwriters on a quest to get a hit Hollywood script to famous producer Dutch Huxley.
Well, I would say one of us is aspiring and the other two are sort of struggling.
Which one of us is aspiring?
Well, they're going to have to listen to the podcast.
But I don't know, and I made the podcast.
Well, I made the podcast, and I think you guys were along for the ride.
So each week we bring in a script, we read it, and then we give each other notes.
And you'll also hear about our adventures navigating the Hollywood system.
The show features amazing guests like Tim Robinson, Lily Sullivan, Weird Al Yankovic, and Rob Hubel.
Like any great blockbuster, it's filled with heartbreak, adventure, suspense, and just a little tasteful nudity.
And some distasteful nudity.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that, guys.
Listen to Get It to Dutch, A Screenwriter's Journey on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. He tells you, go do it now. And then he watches Thor walk away and he goes to talk to the kids.
Which is that voice that he uses when he knows he's full of shit.
Right.
The nodding, the smile.
Wrestling is fixed.
Yeah. Your dad's an actor.
Yes.
He says, and he's confused.
The winners are predetermined.
And it also goes to show, and I do agree, the kids don't recognize him because they only saw him through the car. But I guarantee they do that to a lot of people, you know, make the
faces in the
and
car,
say
yes.
something because they're entertained by their dad's reaction. But they're horrified. He has met them. And even when he walks away, the look on their faces is like.
Well, it's, they thought their dad was something. And now he's telling their dad. They're telling
they're
them that their dad
him
is
about
a
it
fake.
Now. They're going to ask him about it now, which he's not going to enjoy. However, you feel like, is he going to walk in on Larry? Like there's tension there.
Yeah, there's a lot of tension.
Right there.
I was watching it, even knowing what the ending is, although I forget half the time what's going to happen. This was so long ago. I was feeling him, the idea of him like turning around and seeing him standing there.
Right.
You know, it was set up that way. But that's not what happened.
No.
What happens is you are outside letting the air out of the tires, and then we see those cowboy boots.
Yeah.
Standing right there.
And by
there.
The way, I thought as I'm watching it, I think it's wonderful that I'm silent. I look
Of course,
up,
I totally agree.
And I may have done it in the scene, but one of the things that I do on the show is when I'm caught, I go, hey, hey.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll talk to the person, you know, but I didn't
you
there
didn't
or then. Or we kept it out.
I think he was too intimidating to do that.
Well, I think that I at least did one take where I didn't say anything, and that's what they use. That's quite often.
Quite often we give a variety, well, almost always.
Yeah, we do.
We give a variety of choices.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you see what, you know, in editing, it's a completely different thing because you see the flow of something and the rhythm of something.
By the way, you know what's fun about us doing something different? When most of the guest actors that come on the show do the same thing every take. So for us, we can rely on knowing that that pitch is coming. Like they're going to say that and I'm going to be ready.
Try something different.
But I'm not thinking ahead of time what I'm going to say. I just know they're going to say that again.
It's hard sometimes to say the same thing take after take
after
take.
Well, by the way, not hard sometimes. That's been my problem doing stand-up for 40 years.
Of course.
I did a few one-man shows in Chicago. So I did this one-man show. My first one, I Want Someone to Eat Cheese With. And it was very successful. It kept on moving to bigger theaters. And I hated the sound of my voice. I had so much trouble doing it the same way. So I began improvising. And by the end of the run, I don't know what was even left from the beginning of the run. Well, during this time, Jackie Mason was in town doing a one-man show. So I was invited backstage, and I tell him that I'm having trouble with my show because I can't stay focused on the words.
Yeah.
I got to change everything. And he says to me, what are you, a schmuck? You're a schmuck. You got a hit show and you're messing around with it? You're a schmuck. Well, for the rest of my career, I've continued to be a schmuck.
But he was old school, Jackie Mason.
But also very funny.
We were talking brilliantly funny.
Yeah.
And that first show he did, that first Broadway show he did was
amazing.
So fun. One of the funniest things.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why it was so brilliant was because it was years and years and years of material that he had honed. The subsequent shows were not as good.
Right.
Because
they still were very good.
They were still very funny.
Yeah, but
we were talking about this on set yesterday Maybe you weren't there. I forgot who I was talking to.
Well, by the way, it was Jackie Mason. I wasn't there.
No, we weren't talking about Jackie Mason. We were talking about different stand-ups, and some stand-ups, when they get on stage, they know exactly what they're going to do and what order they're going to do. And I used to know what my opening line was going to be because I was too nervous not to know. But that was all I ever knew. Beyond that, I never knew an order. I never had a preconceived notion of what I was going to do. It would just all happen in that moment on stage. You and I work similarly in that way. A lot of comics work our way, and a lot of comics, there's no right
and
or wrong.
Way,
it's
I'm
just
actually,
different.
Well, I'm actually envious of anyone who can do a full
do an A to Z.
Yeah.
Well, I tried it when I would have so much anxiety doing stand-up, and part of it was because of the way I worked.
Right.
And I thought, well, maybe if I had a set, I wouldn't feel so anxious and it wouldn't be so stressful. And I tried it that way, and I was incapable of doing it. I was incapable. It just, it wasn't interesting to me. It wasn't creative to me. It just didn't work for me. So you have to know who you are.
Why? By the way, do you know who set me on the path of the structure of which I use today? Don Rickles.
Mm-hmm.
I became friendly with Don, but
I'll bet you he never had an A to Z.
No,
what
he had
was
a different
do.
Approach. So we're at the Toy Story 3 dinner. There was a dinner before the movie came out. And he actually requested for me to sit next to him. And we weren't tight at this point. So I obviously was so...
Of course.
I didn't even know what... I
was
tongue-tied.
He was an idol of ours as
yes.
a kid. Idol.
So I was like, really? I didn't believe it. And I sat next to him. He was so happy and with his wife and Marla was there, but Marla knew sitting there that I was not going to be available to her at any point during that meal. And we talked and talked, and then he told me the structure that he uses.
Which is what?
You go up and you hit him hard.
Yeah.
Jack Benny has another piece of advice. Didn't give it to me, but I heard it, and I followed that. That's the only deviation. You go out and hit him hard with the best you got. Then you do whatever you want, and you end with your rabbi piece. By rabbi piece, he meant a very sincere, kind, not maudlin.
He could get a little maudlin,
that was a different time.
Yeah, generation.
We kid because we love. Every time I close my show now, and I'm totally sincere, I thank the audience how much they've meant to me, and I hope I've meant something to you. And then my last line is, all right, now back to my life of shame and regret.
Right, you said that.
Yeah. So that's a structure I use. The one other thing that I took, there's these comedy recordings with all the great comedians being interviewed.
Oh, really?
And Jack Benny talked about, he would watch comedians and knew they were not going to go anywhere. And he was asked why. He said because they go up and they go right into their act. When you go out...
They don't feel what the audience needs and who the audience is.
Well, by the way, it's not even the audience. You want the audience... What is the audience? They want the audience to get a sense of you and where you're at on that particular night. Get to know you just a little bit. See that you're human and then hit them with your hard
stuff. But it's also... You know, audiences are so interesting, and this is something we could talk about for hours, but from the second you walk on the stage, the audience has a feeling about
Without
you.
A doubt.
From the way you take the mic, from the way you stand. And for me, it was always that you have to have confidence from the minute you walk on that
Without
stage.
Without a doubt.
But they'll smell it if you don't.
But the exception is, if you're famous, they'll give you about a minute. You got a minute's reprieve.
And by
the way,
60 seconds is a long time.
I know, but they'll give you that minute, which is very generous because they dig you in whatever role you play.
Right.
But after that minute, they will hurt your guts.
That's right. You better
right
deliver.
Away. Yeah.
And you have to be in control.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But you have to be vulnerable and confident at the same time. For me, you do.
It's a hard job.
Okay, back to the show.
Okay, back to the show. So we're almost done. I mean, so we see you're letting the air out of Thor's tires. He walks up. That's it. We don't need to know if he beat the shit out of you. He's obviously going to beat the shit out of you.
Yeah.
And then Larry is at home. And, you know, the whole thing about he and Jason can't decide where to meet. And Cheryl goes through the mail. And she says,
are you expecting something from the city?
No.
Can I open it?
Sure.
Oh my God.
And there's the ticket with the camera from the light with Larry driving and all you see is your mother. Cheryl doesn't know it's your mother. Her big fat ass sitting there.
But by the way, in that moment, because remember when she first did it, he turned and he saw it and then he turned back in disgust.
Right.
Of course, the picture was taken at the moment when he turned and he saw it. So she sees him looking at the ass. Right.
And of course, in typical Curb fashion, we have already established the ash fetish. Ash fetish.
But it all, it starts somewhere. You don't know where it's going. And then it's all tied up in the end.
And yet when you see it in retrospect, it's obvious where it's going, but it's not.
Right. Well, it wasn't for me back then when I read the outlines before the season started. I didn't know where they were going to end. And sometimes I was like blown away that I couldn't believe that he was smart enough to do it that way.
Yeah. Reading the outlines is an experience that most people won't have. But when you read it, you just marvel at it. Like, how did he get there? How did he get there?
Yeah, and he's not a savant because off camera, he's supremely intelligent.
Yes, yes.
So
about
it's not
many
like,
things.
Where does he pick this up? It's like this guy at all times, comedically or personally, is super intelligent. And I think I mentioned, but we've made about 50 bets over the years. And no exaggeration, I've never won one of them.
Really?
Oh, no. This is, he has won, I will tell you the flip side, I'm always paying for our valet parking, and he's never paid me back. Like, I give him money for his car. Anyhow.
I was just saying, this is
why. Oh, he's always intelligent.
Yeah, but this is why I think Larry is a genius, and I use that word very carefully, because when I read the outlines, and I have comedy brain, you have comedy brain, it's transcendent. I don't know how
he's
he gets
that great
there.
A writer
and the
that
transcendence,
you don't know when it's
exactly.
coming.
And the transcendence is what makes it genius.
Well,
that
that's
you don't
where
know how
knocks
he got
it
there.
Over the edge.
Yeah. And we'll discuss it more next time.
With episode three, season two. And I said two in a way that might not have sounded good to our listeners, too much of it on the T. But I apologize. And don't forget, you have a money-back guarantee if the show irritates you at any point, which I'm assuming everything I say. Truly, talk about a shame and regret. You think I don't go home from these recordings and am filled with shame and regret?
Really?
Yeah.
See, I don't feel that.
Well, of course, because you're not disturbed like I am. I'm envious of you.
We'll see you next time, folks.
Thanks, everybody.
The History of Curb Your Enthusiasm is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Justin Rutherford. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover to hide behind.
Detective Weaver said, "I'm sure you know why we're here." I was like, "What in the world is going on?"
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love comedy, movies, and Hollywood satire, you're going to want to listen to a brand new podcast called Get It to Dutch.
In Get It to Dutch, we play three aspiring screenwriters on a quest to get a script to big-time Hollywood producer Dutch Huxley.
Each week on the podcast, we perform a movie script right before your ears.
It's like going to a movie with your eyes closed.
And we have amazing guest stars, including Tim Robinson, Rob Hubel, Lily Sullivan, Jamie Moyer, and Weird Al Yankovic.
Listen to Get It to Dutch, a screenwriter's journey on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
on that because this feels people that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.